Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagno. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, last time we talked, OTAs hadn't begun yet. Now we're knee-deep in OTAs. They're not wrapping up yet. We got mini camp coming up this week, and then back to OTAs the week after that.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're going to just be talking a little bit about what's been seen so far at OTAs, talk about each position group and what's been going on there. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay.
First, we should note this is an uncharted territory for us because we're together in the Northern Oakland County podcast studio. The first time in a long time.
Gosh, a really long time. Like, I feel like we haven't recorded in person in 2 years, it feels like.
It probably has been 2 years. It's been mostly my fault because I don't feel like driving all the way out. Well, at the beginning, it's like, well, let's do it over Zoom. And then it turned into, let's just keep doing it over Zoom.
Well, it's a lot easier, right? I mean, it's easy and convenient. I mean, technology has made everything so easy to use. And I mean, it's to the point where, like, the Zoom stuff just makes quick download onto the computer and then a quick conversion and then boom, away we go. It's a lot simpler than when we first started a whole 5 years ago.
It's weird how doing all that streamlined the process.
Oh yeah,
and now it's quite simple. But that's enough for the show meeting. I guess we should get into the nuts and bolts of things. You want to start on the offensive side of the ball, or maybe do you want to talk about when you were there in person? What was the energy like at OTAs?
Look, the energy was basically it was similar to last year, except there was like a different focus, right? Like last year was about installing the game plan, installing the playbook, getting used to the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this year was more focused on just, now they have new playbooks again, but they understood like what the expectations were from the coaches, and you're returning a ton of staff, a ton of staff, a ton of players, right? So they already knew like how to interact with each other. There wasn't that learning curve of just getting to know people. And so it was just, they got into the groove a lot faster this year. So
they knew how to get Coach Campbell his coffee. Somebody came running out some extra espresso.
Right. And like, they just, everything moved smoothly, right? There was no hiccups. They all knew what they were supposed to do, then, and they executed it. Last year there was a little bit more like standing around when you're transitioning between activities. There was none of that. They all knew, okay, we're done here and we shift to here. And like, I thought what was like interesting was that when they had to do their when they broke off to like individual drills, that once they completed their tasks, like, they were kind of done. Like, the offensive line was the first one done, and they were done. They went in and they had their meeting, and then the defensive line finished next, and the defensive line went over, and there was fans. It was on those past Thursday. So they went over and they greeted the fans, but the skill groups were still working through their processes, still doing their individuals. So it was interesting how like they ended at kind of different times, which is not something I think I'm used to seeing. Like before, it was with Patricia, it was all regimented. Last year they were working everyone right till the very end because they were trying to, you know, figure everything out. This year it just seems, they seem more relaxed. And like I said, everything, it just ran really smooth. So
Well, you talked about relaxed. Let's start at the quarterback position. So does Jared Goff look more relaxed? You know, for what we feel, we're neither of us are really that crazy about Goff, but right. I think, you know, the coaching staff's throwing their full support behind him, which I think is a good thing, you know, like, especially since, you know, Tim Boyle and David Blau aren't breathing down his neck. Like, they should support, they shouldn't be saying negative things about him at this point. We haven't seen any videos on Instagram of Goff woefully underthrowing DJ Chark or anything. Like, what has he been? How has he been in OTAs?
He looks extremely more confident than he did a year ago. A year ago, he looked lost in OTAs. And not only did he look lost, but the whole offense looked lost, right? They missed all three quarterbacks missed throws.
Now we're talking about 2021.
2021, yeah. In 2021, they missed throws. They couldn't hit quick outs. They the efficiency was all over the map. The communication was all over the map. They made the defense look phenomenal, and the defense wasn't phenomenal. It just looked phenomenal. That's how disheveled the offense was last year. Not that way this year. The offense in week one of OTAs struggled a little bit. Week two, they were really efficient. Goff specifically was head and shoulders above the other two. Boyle, oh my gosh, he struggled. He looked like Tim Boyle of last year, and last year he looked bad. He was one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen in 2021 OTAs. Like, he was really bad, and he wasn't much better than he was a year ago. So maybe it's just OTAs just aren't his thing.
Tim Boyle, when he came over from Green Bay, it was, do you think that, the Packers beat writers were like, subverting everybody by saying he looks fantastic in practice.
Right.
Like, they should probably start him over Aaron Rodgers. That's how good he looks from week to week. Were they just lying?
I don't know.
They were just happy he's gone.
I don't know.
And they'd say, oh, he's great, just so somebody else would take him off their hands.
I'll tell you, in training camp, he started slow, and then he got much better in the second half of training camp last year. And he looked really good the back half. The beginning of training camp, though, he struggled. OTAs, he was terrible. And this year's OTAs, he hasn't been that great. Goff, though, which was the original question you asked, Goff looked good. Goff looked sharp. He looked confident. He was making throws that you would expect an NFL starting quarterback to make, like tight window throws, like stuff that we didn't even see a ton last year in the regular season. He did that a couple of times, and it wasn't just like one guy. He hit Chark on a really nice, like kind of a, he kind of started on the outside, shifted inside, and then went down the seam, and he hit him on a tight spot. Then Chark did a crosser route, and he put it a little bit behind him, or maybe like right on his chest instead of in front of him. And Tracy Walker was all over him, and Chark fought through it, but it was a tight window throw. That was where it basically needed to be. And he did the same thing with Josh Reynolds. Like, Josh Reynolds, who has really been known as like this deep threat only guy, was running quick outs, and Goff was hitting him on the money. And it was nice to see there was a connection there, and they really did look. No, Hockenson wasn't at practice. St. Brown was somewhat quiet. I don't know if that's just because the other two outside guys just look great or what, but I thought he had a real nice connection. He had a real nice day. The backup quarterbacks, you could see they weren't pushing it down the field. They weren't making throws over the middle. There was a lot of checkdowns. It was a lot of screens and whatnot. Backups were as they've been, I guess. Right. But I thought Goff looked good. I was happy to see he had taken some steps. And he was, like I said, from a year ago, it was night and day difference between how he looked.
Did you see them in team drills when they were doing running offense versus defense?
Yeah, they run 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s, and then they run situationals. This situationals was like a 1 minute drill. They get the ball at like their 35 with 1 minute, one timeout, and they have to like try and score. The offense has not scored yet. They've done these.
I was going to bring that up. I don't know if we needed to wait till when we talk about defense to discuss it, but the offense has struggled against the defense. And now that might be normal at this time of year for the defense to be ahead of the offense. But I don't know. I thought that was interesting reading that.
Yeah. And so in week one, when they ran those 1 minute drills, Goff took him down the field and then stalled. And then Boyle threw an interception, and that ended their drive. And then Blau went a little bit down the field and then stalled. And this week, Goff again took him down the field and they stalled. They ended up getting sacked. He got sacked.
Wasn't it Aiden Hutchinson doing the sacking?
On Goff, it was so Hutchinson, he got three sacks on Blau last
year. Yeah, I read about that. Yeah, but he has been working more at the first team defense, right?
Yes. three technique, outside right side, outside left side. He's been kind of all over. The first, let me see if I can look at my notes to get exactly who did what on when. But on the first one with Blau, it was on third down. Jayshon Cordell got the sack, which means he's beating the interior first string offensive line. So that was nice to see out of him. And then that killed that drive. And then when the backups came in, they didn't really get a chance to move the ball. And then Boyle got sacked twice in a row. First by Bruce Hector. And then the second one, he got sacked by Jared Davis, who lined up at basically right defensive end. They took four linebackers out. They had two off the ball, two essentially edge guys. And they just had no answer for Jared Davis when he came. I mean, he came just like a shot out of a cannon. So
was Matt Nelson playing left tackle, because there's been no Taylor Decker, right?
Right. No Taylor Decker. So in the second line, it would have been Dan Skipper, who would have given up that sack to Jordan Davis. And then it would have been Jared Davis. And then Hector would have got Stenberg is what I think that's who he would have beat. But for Cornell would have, I think he got Jonah Jackson. That's who Jonah didn't handle that power move that he had. So, you know, look, they don't have pads on, but
it's hard to gather anything.
Right. But basically,
even if Goff was throwing terrible interceptions all over the place, like, well, you know, what does it really mean yet?
Well, there was only one interception and it was Boyle, and he threw it right to Kirby Joseph. And we can talk about that in a little bit too.
Yeah. We're getting a little off track.
Yeah. The first team offenses looked good, but they have stalled at some point, and that's not unexpected. The deep first, second string, and third string offenses, I really haven't been able to get anything going, like at all. And I mean, again, it's not overly surprising, but there's certain things you can pick up. Like, for example, with no Taylor Decker, Sewell's at left tackle and Matt Nelson's at right. So again, not unexpected, but it's very clear Matt Nelson is the preferred third tackle, right? Mm-hmm. And then Chark, St. Brown, and Josh Reynolds were your top three wide receivers. And then when they wanted to cycle receivers in with the first team, it was Cephas and Khalif Raymond, and then St. Brown stayed again. So essentially, that's your top five, and then James Williamson makes six. Like, there's your top six wide receivers. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't think they're really going to get challenged based on how I think they're being used, the investment that the teams have put in them. So like, there's a few things that we weren't totally clear on that. You know, we're starting to get answers to, but the first team offense is starting to take some shape. I'd like to see them finish a little bit better, but again, it's OTAs, and so you can't wait. You know, can't put too much weight behind it.
All right, switching over to the running back position. Now, you're not going to get a lot out of running back, especially when nobody's hitting it.
Yeah,
each other. But 1A is DeAndre Swift, who looks a lot bigger apparently this year. He's packed on a lot of muscle.
Yes, looks like he's been spending time with his dad, who owns
owns the gym. Yeah.
Yep. And
Jamal Williams still 1B. The big question is who's going to be 3.
Yeah.
Jamar Jefferson's look good.
Yeah, I think – I don't recall if they had a consistent 3, right? I think they kind of rotated it a little bit. But Jefferson had looked – he looks like a strong candidate for that RB3 spot. Godwin was injured, or at least not participating, the day that I was there. So I didn't get to see much of Godwin out there. Greg Bell has been getting a little bit of hype because of his speed, and Deuce Staley talked a little bit about him as well in the press conference ahead of OTAs last Thursday. So I don't know. Look, when you follow the money, we always talk about you follow the money. Bell got $100,000 guaranteed to come to the Lions. So I mean, they're not just going to throw away $100,000. But at the same time, $100,000 is a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of the salary.
$200 million payroll.
Yeah, right. So, but they invested in him quite a bit. He had one of the highest guaranteed contracts.
Undrafted free agents.
Correct. Yeah, I think he was third. So, Obi Zay was who's the tackle who has a chance to make the 53 as like OT4 maybe, challenging Dan Skipper for that role. Obi got the most. Then the second most was the Michigan State guard, Jarvis. And then I believe Bell was third. And then, I wrote an article where I broke it all down. And then I showed like how last year's team worked, how last year's OTA or undrafted free agents, how their bonuses worked out and like who got paid how much and, what did it mean and what does it tell us about, this new crop? Like, for example, Jerry Jacobs, he got $5,000 guaranteed. That was it, right? So he definitely, outkicked his expectations.
They got a lot of value out of it.
Right, exactly.
Even though he did get hurt.
Yeah.
Even before that, like the right. team gained a lot of value.
Even AJ Parker only had like 35,000 guaranteed, which really wasn't that much. They were still really low. They were on the bottom half of the UDFAs last year. So basically it just tells you like, just because you got 100,000 from Bell doesn't mean anything. Sage Surratt got 100,000 last year. He didn't make the team. He made the practice squad for 1 week and then he was gone. Javon McKinley got 100,000 last year guaranteed. He was on the practice squad the whole year. And then, he was on and off the practice squad all year, got a futures deal and he didn't even make it to OTAs. So, I mean, doesn't mean anything. It just tells you the team likes him. And then, but he's still got to go out there and still got to prove it. One of the things I found interesting is that he's one of these, like his game speed is better than his like time speed. So he's a guy who will play a little bit faster than what his numbers will stay.
All right. Flopping over to the wide receiver position. You already talked about it a little bit. The top three seem to be solidified, although that'll change once Jameson Williams is available.
Yeah.
You mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's spent a lot of time out on the field, but he wasn't utilized. Now, we look at the last half of the season when it came to fantasy football, just for an example, sure. just to make it easier to talk about, I guess. St. Brown was in the top 10 of NFL wide receiver scoring-wise in fantasy football down the stretch. This season, he'll be coming in as a top 20 wide receiver, draftable, right? Yeah. We're talking fantasy football. But now flipping that back to real life, are we going to, because of the addition of DJ Chark, because of the addition of Jameson Williams, because of Josh Reynolds being here for hopefully 17 games, hopefully he doesn't miss time with injury, are we going to see, hopefully he continues to become a better player, but are we going to see a stats regression? Or are we going to see a usage regression out of Amon-Ra St. Brown?
I still think St. Brown is going to be their number one receiver. He is the most position versatile. He really doesn't need to leave the field. You can play him at all three wide receiver spots. You can put him in the backfield. He can stay out there a lot. Then you add in the fact that he's very reliable. And if you are in a third down and four, like who are you throwing it to? You're going to throw it to St. Brown, right? Like he's proven that he can do those things. So I think from a value standpoint, he's still going to be the top option. Will he be able to produce the numbers that he produced in the last six games?
Six games, like 60%.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. I don't think he'll be on that pace. But could he get 90 and 1,000 yards? Yeah, absolutely. I think he could do that, certainly. I think Chark is going to be like the de facto wide receiver one. And Reynolds will essentially be the three. And then when Jameson comes in, I think Jameson's going to start poaching some time from the outside guys. But I don't think it's going to impact St. Brown a ton. Because, again, he's such a unique role. And even, like, with Khalif Raymond, who plays the same, like, kind of position as St. Brown, he also, they utilize Raymond on the outside a ton, and they showed that in OTAs as well. So, and right now Raymond is your wide receiver four, right? He's a little, he's ahead of Cephas, but I think when Jameson's back, that changes. But right now, yeah, Raymond is four, and then Cephas is five, and then they all kind of bump down a spot. When Jameson's healthy, right now he hasn't done anything. He just stands on the sideline holding the football and looking cool and smiling. And I know that was a big issue with some folks.
Yeah. They didn't like his demeanor after he got drafted. Once he gets that Lion, that gets, it's an inferiority complex of Lions fans that he doesn't want to be here, you know, because you hear that all the time. Well, who's ever going to want to go play in Detroit, right?
Yeah.
So I can understand why people are upset by that. Tight end position, TJ Hawk.
Oh, well, let me go back. For one second. Pimpleton is the local kid.
The walk-ons. Yeah. He got drafted for it.
So. Pimpleton looked good. He's very quick. The problem is
there a spot for him on this team?
Yeah, because Raymond is just as quick. Like, I know Pimpleton is like, he's this little jitterbug. But, I mean, some of the stuff that Raymond was doing out there, it's almost like Raymond was doing it just as a, yeah, see, I can do this too type of thing. And so I like Pimpleton a lot, and I know fans are going to fall in love with him, and he's going to be a camp darling, and he's going to be
Tom Kennedy.
Oh, he's going to replace
Tom Kennedy. Will be Tom Kennedy,
right? But he will be the guy. Pimpleton's going to be the guy that fans fall in love with, and then they're going to be disappointed when he doesn't make the team. But here's the thing:
is he a practice squad guy? Practice squad guy?
You know, I don't know if they're keeping the protected, but if they do, yes. Yes, I think he would be. He's 100% a practice squad guy. And he's a guy I think they would prioritize. And he's local, and he loves that he got picked up by the Lions. Yeah. I don't think there's any reason. He reminds me a ton of Jerry Jacobs last year. Jerry Jacobs was so in love with the fact that the Lions gave him a shot that there was no way he was going anywhere else if he didn't make the roster. Like, you could tell. And then he just kept getting better and then eventually made the roster. But you could tell, like, from talking to him and just watching him and listening to, like, what he had to say, like, if he didn't make the 53, he absolutely was not going anywhere. He loved that they took a shot on him. And Pimpleton's a lot of the same way. And so, but Raymond does everything that Pimpleton does. He just is more reliable, and he's a veteran, and that's going to go a long way. Now, if Raymond, doesn't step up, or if maybe if Pimpleton shows like some electricity on punt returns, we'll see how it goes. But I don't see him pushing on Raymond a little bit. The only other guy I wanted to talk about was
Trinity Benson. His catch of OTAs worth a fifth round draft pick.
Yes or no? We'll see. Right now, he's wide receiver seven and probably one of the first ones out. Right?
Well, wouldn't that be last man out?
Last man out, right? And so, what I found interesting about him was every catch that he made, he threw his hands up or he did some sort of like symbol with his arms. Sure. And like, I jokingly was like, why is he doing this? Like, the person next to me said, I think it was Jeremy it might've been that said it, said he just wants everyone to know that he caught it. And I'm like, well, that's probably a pretty good strategy. If you're a guy that everyone's down on, let him know, he caught like three or four balls, right? Like, he was
the first guy in line. A big point that you're doing stuff. Yeah,
right.
I get it.
Exactly. And for the second team that wasn't doing much, he was the guy making catches.
The leader of the second team.
So the verdict's still out. It's going to be hard for him to crack the top six, but I don't think they're ready to give up on him. And he's putting some work in. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes from there. Made a really nice catch. One of the better catches of the day. And so, we'll see what happens, but you can't write them off just yet, I guess.
All right. Tight end position, TJ Hockenson entrenched as the number one tight end.
Yep.
Who is getting the most looks at number two?
Well, here's the thing. TJ was not there. And
okay,
then,
well, yeah, excuse me. Who's getting right. most looks at number one tight end?
Well, that's it wasn't just that TJ wasn't there. Garrett Griffin wasn't there. James Mitchell is still recovering from an ACL. Okay, and Derek Deese wasn't there either. So we only got to see Brock Wright, Shane Zylstra, and Nolan Given, a UDFA.
Yeah, okay, so we never saw this Nolan guy before. We've right. seen some Zane Zylstra.
Right.
And we've seen plenty of Brock Wright.
So what they did at OTAs was they basically rotated Wright and Zylstra through the first or second team. But it was Zylstra that was the one making the catches. But again, that shouldn't be surprising because Brock Wright is more of a blocker and Zylstra is more of a pass catcher. But yeah, Zylstra made at least two catches that I can recall. One of them really nice from Goff he basically just went right down the seam and Goff nailed him. But yeah, Zylstra, again, making a little bit of noise, showing he can hang on, he can catch the ball. And, they were very, aggressive in making sure that they kept him in the offseason, right? Because he, mm-hmm. so they, made sure that they got a new futures deal and kept him on the roster. He's probably coming into camp at like tight end 5, right? On a roster that might probably only keep 3 pure tight ends. And then Jason Kabinda as well. But, can he be a guy who bumps Jared Griffin off, and maybe James Mitchell isn't ready, but even though he's supposed to be, I don't know. It's going to be a tough tight end room to crack for Zylstra, but he made some catches and made a little noise. At OTAs, he looked the more impressive, but again, that's not unsurprising given the circumstances.
Still no contract extension for TJ Hockenson.
Not yet. Unfortunately he was sick the first OTA, and then the second OTA he was supposed to be available and wasn't, and we're not sure why. We haven't really got an answer.
Remember that's something I told you off the air a while ago. It might be true. My theory that Dan Campbell doesn't like TJ Hockenson. Well, my theory.
He spoke about him, right? He talked about Hockenson in the press conference ahead of the the OTAs on Thursday. And he basically said, that Hockenson they don't need Hockenson to be like one of the elite tight ends in the league. They don't need him to be like his best buddy in San Francisco. I don't know why I'm blanking on
Kittle. Kittle.
Yeah. They don't need him to be Kittle. They don't need him to be Kelsey. Kyle Pitts or any Kelsey. Right. What they need is they need him to just do what they're asking him, right?
Is that also code for we're not going to pay you like the highest paid tight end?
I honestly, I do think that when push comes to shove,
they'll let him go. That's what's going to happen, but they might let him go.
Well, he talked about the fact that finding a guy like Hockenson is a rare thing. It's rare to find a tight end that has this skill set.
Sure.
But at the same time, the way that they're building this team is by adding a lot of talent all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to be one superstar that they want to just be, someone that teams have to account for every week, they want to have multiple guys that can win, so that a different guy can be a different superstar each week. That seems to be what they're building. And so what they're hoping to get out of Hockenson is that when they need to turn to somebody to catch a 3rd and 4, that he will be the guy they want to turn to. Right now, I told you earlier, I think it's St. Brown will be that guy right now, but they want Hockenson to be the reliable guy.
But you want them both to be reliable. So that once again, schematically, mm-hmm. when opposing teams come to town, it's like, well, do we worry about Hockenson in this situation? We worry more about St. Brown.
Right. And I think from a pass catching standpoint, I think Hockenson is really doesn't get the credit he deserves from Detroit fans. Like the numbers he was putting up last year before injury were like top 6 numbers or something like that. Yep. The hard part with Hockenson is that he hasn't been as dominating as a run blocker, and that has soured people, I think, because He was built coach. Well, he was, well, look, he was sold to us, the, us fans.
Yeah, yeah, right? Well, he was a high, very high draft pick. He needed to be able to block and catch.
Yeah, yeah. That is that he, create. He, yeah, exactly. He deserved top 10 consideration because he could do both things at a high level. Yep. Right. And he just hasn't been able to do it. And Campbell said, look, if he figures out how to like be a really dominant run blocker, like there's no telling where he's, his ceiling's going to go. If he comes out this year and all of a sudden he's like figured it out and he's all of a sudden is just throwing people around like Kittle does, oh, he's going to get paid like crazy. But again, they have him under, they gave him the 5th year option. So he's got this year and next year to prove it. Like they don't, like you've got Hockenson for 2 more years. You don't need to get him under contract right away. It'd be, you know, it'd be good for security. I'm sure he'd want to get it done if he could.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't think they're in any rush. And there are obvious parts of his game that they want to improve. And if he does, yeah, then he'll get paid. But this tight end market is starting to boom. And the wide receiver market has already boomed, right? And so keeping these guys, you know, these, you know, potential superstars on your team at lower level contracts as long as you can. That's a good idea for what they want to do. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk offensive line, although there probably isn't very much to talk about because they weren't able to slam around into each other. Exactly. No Taylor Decker, you mentioned, but the rest of the group was intact. Logan Stenberg's getting into fights, and that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, there's not a lot. Sewell's showing versatility, like going back to the left side. Matt Nelson stepping up at right tackle. These are expected things. So, because they didn't have pads on, and because of where they were practicing on the field, it was basically like the opposite end of where I was. And so I ended up gravitating more towards the defensive line because they were closer to my where my area was. And I'm just fascinated by what the defensive line can do, right? Because that's a lot of investment in the defensive line this year. So that's where I wanted to put my eyes during individual drills. So, yeah, I don't have a lot to say about the offensive line. It's, you know, with no pads. Even when Frank, they get Ragnar's burned
out there,
he is.
That's a big plus.
Yeah. And like I said, even when they get burned with no pads, it's understandable. Yeah. Because again, yeah. Right. Cause you're not really beating these guys up. And so when the pads come on in the fall,
you really can't hold.
Yeah.
You get away with some holding when everybody has pads on.
Right.
Now, like, what do you get? Everybody's going to notice.
Right. So yeah, not a lot to say about the OL.
Jason Kabinda.
We
kind of skipped his spot. Bunch,
yeah.
To let's say his name just to.
I tell you, he was with the running backs during the first individual drills. And he's just so massive compared to them.
Sure.
Like he's so much bigger. I don't even know which running back was trying to block him. Like they were doing like, you hold the bag and then I'm going to block him. He just was so much bigger than them. That's the only thing that really stood out to me. I was like, he looked a little bit even more rocked up as well. I know we talked about Swift, but Kabinda he's always been jacked up, but he looked big, which was, I guess, what you want out of that position.
Offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. Mm-hmm. Was he in total control during OTAs?
Yeah.
He's the one calling all the plays.
Yeah. Yeah, right now Dan Campbell just wants to oversee everything, so he's letting his coordinators run the show. He's letting his position coaches do their thing. Campbell has said that he wants to be able to take this, overall global, I guess, approach to the team and be able to see everything. And so Ben Johnson is calling the plays. He designed the new offensive scheme. He spent some time with Jared Goff during the spring. They talked about things that worked for Jared Goff in the past. They looked at some of his film from LA, talked about what worked, what didn't work, what they should add in the playbook, what they should remove, general philosophies on what helps him be more efficient, like, he's really good at play action, right? So they want to incorporate as much play action as they can. They're going to try. They felt like their offense was too predictable because they would take a long time to get the play and then they would get to the line and then it would be short on time. And so then their offense became predictable in their routine. So now they want to run a little bit more tempo. Now that doesn't mean run to the line type of thing, but they want to have situations where sometimes they huddle and they break fast and they're at the line of scrimmage with 20 seconds instead of just 12, right? And that extra 8 seconds can give them time to stress the defense a little bit more, allow them to shift to diagnose what scheme the defense is in. And so they're going to try and mix up that tempo and kind of, even if it's just getting to the line faster, they want to do those things to give Goff more time to assess, give Ben Johnson more time to assess what's going on in front of them and just put a little bit more urgency on the defense. So yeah, a lot of investment in Goff and trying to, and I think he's Ben Johnson said he wants to have Goff have his best year of his career, right? Quote unquote, best year of his career. So to do that though, he's doing things that we talked about when they brought Goff over, right? Look at what he did in 2018 and start incorporating those things into your playbook now. And Anthony Lynn didn't really do that.
No.
Right. And then you saw some of those things incorporated in the back half of the season, which is when Goff got a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident. And a lot of that was Ben Johnson's role as passing game coordinator. And so Ben Johnson has really invested a lot of what he's going to do this year around Goff. And so there's, make no mistake, Goff is their guy. Now, whether he succeeds or fails, or whether this offense maybe has to change again next year if he's not the quarterback, that's all to be determined. We've seen on defense that they're willing to change to adapt to their players. And if Goff isn't here, they'll change the offense to adapt to their players, right? But this year, Goff is there, and they're going to try and give him everything that they can in order to give him the opportunity to be successful.
Ben Johnson, they're calling all the plays in OTA still. They're asking questions of Coach Campbell.
Yeah.
If who's going to be calling the plays. Coach Campbell's been mum on that.
He
doesn't know. I get it. And he wants to make the decision as late as possible. Maybe it turns into a distraction. Maybe it doesn't as training.
It very much could become a distraction, especially if they keep asking. Because look, the media is going to keep asking because that's the media's job.
You don't know.
Yeah, right. And he has Dan Campbell's basically said that he might not make that decision until they're right before the season.
Until week four of the regular season.
Well, three now, right?
Not of the preseason, the regular
season. Oh, the regular season. Campbell jokingly said if he scores 80.
Yeah, I saw that. 85 points, right. He'll give him the job now. Maybe 84.
Jokingly, Ben Johnson said when the media told him that if he scored 85, Johnson jokingly said, well, I need to start game planning, and walked away from the podium and then came back, of course. But look, Ben Johnson looks totally relaxed up there. He talks and interacts with the media in a way that I think – we're still so used, I'm still so used to the Patricia stuff, and everything is just so guarded, was just so guarded for those 3 years or whatever it was, lifetime, that when Ben Johnson is open and talking about the fact that when they got into the red zone last year, their running efficiency dropped significantly. And he's like, and it wasn't even like at the goal line running that drops efficiency that dropped. It was like, he's like, we got to the 19 and all of a sudden our running efficiency went from like 60% to like 20%. And he's like, and I don't know exactly why. And so like, we've been looking at trying to figure out what's going on different. What is the way we're setting things up. And so like, he's very open about like, this was a problem for us and this is what we have to fix. And then he talked about like how, like very openly about like, look, this is what we need to do. And he's like, we need to be more efficient in this avenue and we need to be more aggressive here. And then when like he was asked about how easy is it, how excited are you to get Jameson back? He brought up the fact that he's like, it's not like Jameson's just going to get healthy and then walk right into a starting role. Like, he's going to have to build chemistry with Jared Goff. He's going to have to learn a playbook. They're going to have to work on timing. And he's like, it's going to be really hard for us to get him up to speed and into the rhythm. And if it happens during the season, it's going to take time. So even if like Jameson goes on the pup and he's comes off after week six, it still might not be till like week 10 or week 11 before Jameson's really having the impact that I think most people think that he could. So, and he was open and honest about it. I mean, open to the point that people were writing articles like Ben Johnson's worried about like Jameson come fitting in. Like, he's going to take time, and that's all understood. But again, he was very upfront and open about it. He said, we have a plan for him. When he's ready, we're going to implement the plan, and then we know how we want to use him. We know how we want to incorporate him, but like, it's going to be harder than like, I think what people think it's going to be. And then again, open and honest. And that was again, nice to see.
All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. We'll start with the defensive line.
Mm-hmm. Lots of players that have been making noise, right?
And then the young players, the highly drafted young players that everybody's keeping tabs on.
You want to start on the edge or in the middle?
Start in the middle.
All right. Brockers and McNeil are your two starters, right? As expected, right?
No doubt about that in practice, right? Those are the two guys.
Yep, that's it. Now, they've shown some sets that – look like last year's defense where they use three interior guys. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, it's Levi. Levi joins the mix on that. And that, again, totally expected. When they stick with the two, it's again Levi, but they also are rotating Jashawn Cornell in on those spots as well. John Pennacini has not been at OTAs. OTAs are voluntary. And from what we were told, every player, all 89 players, 89 of the 90 players have reported to the Lions in some capacity. The only one that has not is John Pennacini.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so
not even his agent.
I don't know why he isn't there. Now, it could be a variety of reasons. He had a birthday, could be he's with his family, right? Honestly, sure, like, I mean, it's silly things like that, right? But it's a new scheme. And you would think that you would want
to
be there
to absorb,
and
even then, the new scheme fits him more than the old scheme.
Well, it doesn't fit him, right? It doesn't fit him as much, right? Because he was more of a two gapper, right? Aggressive, right? So now this has it kind of smells a little funny, and then maybe that's just me being overly paranoid or whatever, like, you know, trying to be the conspiracy theorist, but doesn't quite fit the system. He hasn't quite shown up. It kind of is giving me, and I hate to say this, he's kind of giving me like Tyrell Crosby vibes.
Oh boy.
Like, remember Crosby? He got replaced by Penei Sewell, then he didn't show up to OTAs, then when he did show up, he was a little bit behind, then trying to catch up, he gets injured, then I was trying to rush back from an injury, and then he gets even more injured, then he gets misdiagnosed, and like, it just becomes this domino effect. Mm-hmm. With Crosby, with Pennacini not fitting the system, kind of like, you know, that whole interior line has been, their roles have been reduced, where they're really only going to rely on like maybe four or five guys, as opposed to last year they had seven. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he's feeling the squeeze and he's just like, I don't know.
I need to stay healthy, maybe, and then they get rid of me and I can go find somewhere else.
And maybe I'm reading the tea leaves a little bit too hard there. And maybe he's just like, hey, I got some family stuff I'm dealing with. Maybe he's just like, hey, I got a birthday. And my mom wants me to be, I don't know. It could be anything in the entire world. I'm just saying the optics on it are not great.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's just something simple. Hopefully he's there for mandatory minicamp this week. Because if he's not there for mandatory minicamp this week, which he could get an excused absence for, if there is like legit something going on. But if he's not there for mandatory minicamp, you start to wonder, right? Now you really are going to start to wonder what's going on. Because that's not voluntary. Matt's obviously in the name mandatory, right?
Right.
So we'll see what happens with him. How quickly do they put him in the rotation? Like with McNeil, he flexes between the three and the one easily. Pennacini, not so much. Brockers, Levi, Jayshon Cornell, those guys all live at the 3-4-I-5, right? Like, and so what we saw was a guy like Demetrius Taylor, a UDFA, who was taking like reserve snaps at when they went with the nose. And he's not even a nose. He's a 5-technique, 4-I type guy anyways, but he stepped in at the nose, went with Pennacini not there. And again, we saw a lot of Bruce Hector and Cornell. Cornell, Bruce Hector, Levi, they all kind of rotated with the twos. And so, and then just to, for fun, we got to see some of the edge guys kick inside as well. And I thought that was a nice little wrinkle. And it shows you how they're going to want to add more edge rushers onto the field at,
in third down or even passing
situations. Yeah, there's going to be concepts because of the type of edge rushers that they have. There's going to be concepts where they're going to have essentially three edge rushers and one defensive lineman, and then maybe another edge rusher on the outside. Like they're going to have packages for a lot of different stuff. And that interior defensive line role, they're only going to need a couple, like four guys. And so right now, if I had to pick them, I'd say Brockers and McNeil start, and then Levi and Cornell are your two backups. That would be my guess as the top four interior guys. I think if I had to pick a 53 today, those four guys would be on my 53, and I don't think I'd keep any of the other ones.
So Levi looks stronger.
Yeah, but you know what? You always worry when it's a back, right? Because like you never know what's going on. Backs can pop up at any time, sure, and be a problem. He said that they have a plan. They go through a routine with him before practice and after practice. They with the trainers, they have a whole team of, like, you know, even the sports science people are working heavily with him in order to get him a regimen that's going to keep him healthy and stronger.
All right, moving outside of the defensive ends, we'll talk about big defensive end. We'll talk about the rush end. Are we seeing, is it Romeo Okwara? Is he playing the big defensive end?
Well, he will. He's not there yet, right? Like he's
Achilles injury.
Yeah, he's not as far along as Jeff Okuda is. We haven't seen Romeo yet. But again, it's not overly surprising. Again,
that's who we expect to see, though, there in week one.
Yes. And if he's not there, my guess is Hutchinson will play that role and Charles Harris will play the rush end.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
At camp, Harris and Hutchinson, they basically just rotated sides. Like,
yeah, they're flopping back and forth.
Yeah, because there's going to be times when you want Hutchinson stressing that left tackle.
Well, that's what I assumed. Thought that's where they were going to need to use him.
But I also think he's the best option at that big end if Romeo's not there. Again, that's also a spot where if they want to get big, they can kick Levi or Brockers to that left end, you know what I mean? And use it as like a 5-technique. And then they have linebackers who are hybrid edge rushers who we're going to talk about in a minute, like Julian Okwara, who you can then put on the outside. So you could essentially see a front where you have Hutchinson at the rush end, McNeil, Brockers, Levi at the 5, and then like a Julian Okwara or a Charles Harris standing up at, like, we would remember it as like the jack, right?
Right.
But they're calling it like their Sam. So right, you line up as like a stand up pass rushing outside linebacker at like the 9-technique type of spot, just outside of the tight end. And that's going to be a role that they're going to incorporate into their scheme. And Hutchinson is going to, while I don't think they necessarily are going to be like standing him up as like a linebacker, I do think they're going to be moving him at different spots around between the different rush ends. And they have a variety of things that they can do with that front. But yeah, Hutchinson and Harris are going to get a lot of play. Romeo's still not back. Pascal wasn't there on Thursday that I was there. And then Austin Bryant was also injured. And then I know. And then Comiskey was still, you know, getting acclimated. And then Eric Banks, was also injured as well. So you really only had a new guy, Hutchinson and Harris, and then you had your pass rushing outside guys. Now, that meant we got to see a lot of Julian Aguara and James Houston as in pass rushing roles, right? So Hutchinson and Harris would be with like the ones, and then they would use Julian and Houston with the twos because they didn't have a lot of the other edge guys. And so, yeah, I mean, look, that's
how did Houston look? Is he quick?
He is. He's pretty quick. But remember, like, he was on one side, Jared Davis was on the other. Jared Davis got sacked, right? So they have a couple of guys that can do this. Like, Pittman can play on that outside too. Like, Davis and Pittman, even though they're more off the ball guys, they can play at that outside role. But this kind of Sam hybrid, you know, pass rushing outside linebacker role that they have, that's like going to be a legit role. And it probably won't be like a starting base role because they're going to be a nickel a lot of the time, but they're going to use this a ton based on what I've gathered. Yeah. Because Julian was everywhere. Julian lined up with his hand in the dirt at defensive end. He stood up as a defensive end. He stood up as a Sam linebacker. He played off the ball. And he was just, and then he did this with all three strings. Like, when they would sub players out for the second string, he would just stay and he would shift to a new position. Like, Julian he was on the field a ton. And I think that's great. I think getting him as much work as they can, and then to be able to have a guy like that they can bring onto the field, and he'll be at the edge one time and then he'll be out over the A gap another. Like, that's a phenomenal weapon to have up front. And so it also gives them a lot of flexibility depending on, you know, what they're looking to get done. Like, if they want to go a little bit bigger, they can put, like I said, they can shift Levi outside and create like three more bigger defensive interior guys with Hutchinson, and then have a flexible linebacker who can pass rush, and you can move to different spots on the field as well. So it's really interesting to see when you start looking at all of the dynamics of what they have by adding this like kind of pass rushing linebacker role, in addition to adding more depth at the two defensive end spots. It really gives them a lot of pass rushing potential. Like, remember, in 2020, they had one down edge rusher and one stand-up edge rusher. This team has two down edge rushers and a stand-up edge rusher. Like, they literally have almost, and then from a player standpoint, they have almost double the amount of players. That team had five edge rushers. This team has 10, right? So, there's a lot of things that they can do with the types of players that they have acquired, and it gives them the freedom to kind of mix some things up. And we saw that pass rush come through. Like, they had three sacks in the 1 minute drills, three sacks. That's pretty good. And then the week before, Hutchinson had three in one set, you know, of downs. Right. So the pass rush is something that we haven't seen in Detroit in a while,
right?
But they've invested a lot of capital, and the early results are, it sure seems like they're going to have different ways to bring pressure.
Well, and they're going to need to do that because, yeah, you know, sure. Hutchinson's the number two overall pick, and his goal is going to be a double digit sack guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully for the Lions, he's a 17, 18 sack guy, you know, like when he enters his prime.
Yeah.
But he's not there yet.
No.
And the expectations aren't really going to be there for him to get to 10. You know, the 10 would be, you know, that's going to be a great rookie season. So
sure,
they are going to have to generate pressure in some wild ways. You know, they're going to have a lot of different looks, like you've just been explaining. So that's a good sign that it looks like that's what they're going to be willing to do, because they're going to have to generate interesting ways of making pressure, because they can't just expect it out of one or two players.
Yeah, and like, look, in those three sacks that they had, two of those three sacks came from interior guys. Now, so like Cornell's sack that I kind of glossed over it a little earlier, the defensive line when Cornell got the sack was Charles Harris at pass rushing end, and then Cornell at 1-3 technique, Hutchinson at the other three technique, and then Julian Aquara at the other defensive end spot. And the offensive line went to those edge guys, and Cornell just got home, right? Right? I mean, like, that's the type of attention that these guys can draw you. And being able to flex Hutchinson inside, it just he adds a different he element.
Has to be accounted
for. Yeah, and that's not something we've seen in a while, right? So that's it, that's an exciting aspect about how I think that the pass rush is something that should be improved.
All right. Off the ball linebackers, I think we covered, you know, the defensive ends and the Sam position. So let's talk about Alex Anzalone and the rest of the guys.
Anzalone and Barnes were the starters in OTA, the first week of OTAs. And then they started mixing Chris Board in week two. He didn't just take snaps from like Derek Barnes. He took snaps from Anzalone as well. And
they just want to see him.
Yeah, both sides, right? But it was very clearly those three guys rotating through the first team. And then whoever wasn't in on the first team, that rep would be on the second team, along with typically Jared Davis, sometimes Josh Wood got in there.
So we might see Jared Davis at his old position here and there.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to have him at a couple different spots. I think they're going to use him off the ball. I think they're going to use him on the edge. I think they want him to be more flexible. But Josh Woods got in. I think between Davis and Woods, I don't think there's a clear who's LB4 type of thing. Sean Hamilton, Deion Hamilton was in on that third team with either Woods or Davis, whoever wasn't in on second team. And then, you know, Rodriguez is still working his way up as expected from a rookie. Now he'll probably climb the ladder based on, you know, everything we've heard and kind of seen out of him. He looks really good, but he's still a rookie, a day three rookie at that. And so he's going to start on the bottom part of the depth chart for a while. He'll probably open training camp up and as a four stringer. And that's, again, to be expected. Nothing anybody should really, you know, should panic about, because I know there's a lot of fans out there that are really excited to see Rodriguez. But they're giving the veterans looks early, and that's to be expected off the ball.
All right. And that's the weakest position group. It's probably the one we have the least to say
about. Yeah. I mean,
we have to see how
it develops. Sure looks like it's going like Anzalone, Board, and Barnes are your top three. How many do you keep after that? Rodriguez sure seems like you're going to keep him. Mm-hmm. So that's four off the ball. Are you going to keep more than four? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're keeping like Julian and James Houston as like your hybrid guys, you might not keep more than four off the ball linebackers. And so like Board, Barnes, Anzalone, and Rodriguez would probably be my four, even though Rodriguez isn't repping as high as some of the others.
He'll end up spending time on the practice squad. Probably.
Well, maybe. I mean, if he doesn't, but again, Josh Woods right now,
not dressing.
Well, yeah.
When they go to 40, makes a 53 man, he might not always be on the 46.
I think what'll be interesting with this linebacker group is that a lot of the reserve roles will be determined on special teams, right? Last year, they kept five off the ball guys active on game day, and three of them were almost exclusively special teamers. So Josh Woods is a really good special teamer. Rodriguez is, and we anticipate he's going to be a good special teamer based on his skill set. Board is a phenomenal special teamer, right? And so, like, if Anzalone and Barnes are your starters, you could end up with Board, Woods, and Rodriguez. But can you keep all five guys on the 53? I don't know, especially if you're keeping Houston and Julian, right? It gets really complicated really fast. And maybe that's bad news for James Houston if they feel they need to keep another guy like Josh Woods because of his special teams ability. Or maybe Houston can step up and be a great special teamer, and then that hurts Josh Woods' chance. Well, we'll see. The linebackers, like big special teams battles with these reserve linebacker spots.
All right, heading over to the defensive back group. We'll start with the corners, where it's the position people are going to be looking at very closely, but only because of Jeff Okuda.
So Okuda,
mainly because of Jeff Okuda. Yeah, there's a couple other stories.
In week one, Okuda was only
burned for three catches, 103 yards.
And OTAs week one, he was only doing individual drills. In OTA week two, he was only doing walkthroughs in week one. In week two, he was doing walkthroughs and individual drills. So he's already starting to expand his game. By minicamp, who knows what he's going to be in. Maybe my guess is they're going to limit him to those two facets for OTAs and then start working him in later in the fall, like in a little bit more into the teamwork. But they're saying that from a physical standpoint, he's not far away from being back. And he has said the physical rehab hasn't even been that challenging. It's been more of the mental stuff. And even Campbell said it's the hard part's going to be getting him those mental reps and getting him into the mental caught up on like the playbook and back into the routine and all those things. So that's what he's working on now. And it's neat because like, when you would think like if because he's not in the team drills, you know, people might assume that he's just like off to the side with the trainer or maybe just watching. He's not. He's sitting there with a play sheet in his hands and he's watching the play and he's calling out to the young defensive backs like assignments. And then when they finish the play and the rookies or the second year guys are coming off to the side, he's the one that's grabbing them and saying, look, you need to be here. You need to be here. And he's telling them like, this is what you need to be doing different. So he's very much involved in what's going on the field. And he's, you know, he was such a great tutor for the young guys last year. He's already kind of stepping right back into that mentoring role for some of the younger corners and stuff. And so he's very involved. Like he's not taking plays off. He's not, you know, sitting off the side and like just saying, oh, I don't have to play. So it's cool. Like he's doing what we expect him to do, which is always a little bit more than the guy next to him. And that's kind of his mentality is I'm going to do what I need to do and a little bit more. And so I have high hopes for Jeff. I think he is a highly intelligent, well-grounded individual. And he showed so much potential in camp last year. He played well in week one, except for one play, but everyone wants that one play that he gave up is the end of the world for everybody. Sure. And so it's like
their lasting image.
Yeah. Right. But look, I can't wait to get there. I said it when it happened, he comes back healthy and improves. Like I'm like, it's all anyone's going to remember. Right. Yeah. And so, we'll see. And unfortunately, it's still another 3 months before we're actually probably going to get to see him, right? Yep. At least. So the wait will continue, but he's a lot further along than I expected him to be 8 months removed from that. And so I'm very encouraged.
So who are we going to see opposite of Amani Oruwariye?
Well, that's the trick, right? Because they've started doing this hybrid concept with their secondary. Honestly, it's getting to that point.
It's good. It's the present of football. They finally have joined the present.
Right. Right. So they have the linebacker edge hybrid thing going, and now they have the corner safety hybrid thing going. And if week one was today and Okuda's not there, it would be Amani Oruwariye, and then it would be Will Harris on the outside next to him. It would be. And I know people are going to be mad about that.
What's happened.
That's crazy. Melifonwu, they've started giving reps at safety. Now they're also giving him reps at corner. I know everyone heard he's getting reps at safety, and everyone is assuming he's making the transition to safety only. And that's not the case. They're transitioning him between. And when Melifonwu wasn't there in week two of the OTAs, they took Savion Smith and they started giving Savion Smith a natural corner, that kind of hybrid safety reps at safety as well. So I don't think that position is going away. Now with Harris, it's the opposite. He was a safety who's now playing corner. Very clearly when they're going through walkthroughs, Okuda was in there ahead of Will Harris. Like there was no mistaking. It was Okuda and Oruwariye. And if Okuda was ready to go, they would be your starters. But if Okuda's not ready to go, it sure looks like they trust Will Harris to hold down that outside corner spot. And Melifonwu, like I said, they're cross-training him because he's like this super athlete who's tall and long and can he's excellent off the ball. Like, remember how last year they talked about how his off coverage was what was so appealing about him at Syracuse. And so they're like, that's why we liked him in the third round. Well, all those off the ball skills translate to safety like so easily. And so it makes a ton of sense. Like, that's why in the draft, people thought Melifonwu might transition to safety just in general. And now they're giving him both. They're giving him safety looks. They're giving him some corner looks. And I think if they were worried about Jeff Okuda recovering, they wouldn't be giving Melifonwu those looks. I think they would have him at the outside and pushing Will Harris and trying to, you know, because they need some depth at corner. But that tells me that they're confident in Okuda. So they're cross-training a couple of these receivers. Okuda's on his way back. Will Harris is holding on a role because he's a veteran that they trust who's really athletic. Amani Oluwari is a lock at one spot. Mike Hughes, who played outside in week one, played mostly inside in week two behind AJ Parker. So what we saw in week two was Parker was your starter in a slot. Mike Hughes was your two and Chase Lucas, the seventh rounder. He was your third in the slot. And when they ran nickel, like basically the whole time. Right. So that left guys like Mark Gilbert, Cedric Boswell, who's a UDFA, even Jermaine Waller, Bobby Price. Those were your team two and three outside corners. Like I said, because there was no Iffy and Savion was in that hybrid training. So, there's still a lot to shake out. When Jerry gets healthy, he'll be he'll add even more depth into this mix. Jacobs was him and Melifonwu basically walked around together because neither were participating, but the rest of them were in and they were rotating through. And we saw some versatility from a couple of guys like Hughes and Smith, but I think the kind of top guys, it's they have a clear idea of who they like at what spot in right now anyways. And I think, again, I know people hate it, but Will Harris is a guy that's not going away and could end up being a starter at some point, like either in the preseason, maybe during the regular season, if one of these guys get hurt. But he's a guy that they trust.
Moving to the safety position, you've already talked about some crossover, but and you mentioned Tracy Walker earlier in the podcast.
Yeah.
So he's locked in.
I assume. Yeah. And Deshaun Elliott is the other one. It's Tracy Walker and Elliott. Those are your starters. Boom. After that, they are using guys in a few different ways. They've used Kirby Joseph at both spots. They've used Brady Breeze at both spots. And they actually were bumping Breeze up to the twos and bumping CJ Moore back to the threes. They were kind of rotating him a little bit, but Breeze got a little bit more run with the twos this week. And, Tracy and Elliott, they that's what you expect. You expected those guys to start, and they did. Joseph, I was really impressed with because he's showing the range as advertised, right? On one play in the 1 minute drills, he was with Breeze, and Breeze dropped to the single high safety, and Kirby dropped down into the box and like a robber, and then Blau. I don't know if he was not anticipating Joseph dropping or if he just didn't see him or what, but Joseph dropped down, read the quarterback, jumped the route, got the pick, and he would have been a great turnover. And then on the very next play, Joseph drops into the single high. And so like, that's exactly why they drafted him in the third round, because he's a guy who has a nose for the ball. He has wide receiver hands because he used to play wide receiver. And he can drop in the single high with range, and he can drop into that robber spot and cut those under routes. So Joseph, I'm pretty excited to see how he does. And look, if Harris ends up at corner and Melifonwu ends up at safety or whatever, and they go into the season with Tracy Walker, Elliott, Joseph, and Melifonwu, or Will Harris, whichever one, that's a good safety group. And then if you can add another guy because of special teams, like your Breeze or your CJ Mora, who I think is a terrific special teamer, that'd be a win for the secondary, I think. And you know, Juju Hughes came in, but again, he's still third string. Didn't really see a whole lot of him, but he was maintaining that kind of free safety role. I think it's going to take a little while for him to acclimate more, but that's where he was.
Talk a little bit about the coaching staff, Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
Like nothing's really changed on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I mean the scheme, right? I
the
mean,
scheme like, has changed, yeah, but there's, there's, what's the word I'm looking for? There's consistency. Like yeah. It's the same group.
Yeah.
And the players should be comfortable with the coaches, and maybe there's got to be more growth this year. And I guess this is a pretty good opportunity for
it. Yeah. A lot of carryover, a lot of easy situations where you can see where the team should take steps.
They're now on the same page.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And they're still going to have concepts from last scheme. Like they're really just making the big change is just going to be with the guys up front. The secondary is going to be the exact same secondary that we saw last year.
And just hope it improves a little bit.
Right. And I think making guys, more position flexible, like your Melifonwu, Will Harris, and even Mike Hughes being able to flex in and out of the slot. Like
it creates more depth for your team in a way.
Yeah. And you can disguise things right a little bit as well. It allows him to be more creative. So both the front seven and the back seven have the flexibility to hide intentions and scheme up specific situations where they can, surprise the offense.
Right, the kicking game.
We didn't see much of it, right? In week one of OTAs, it was not great. The kickers, I think Patterson missed both, and Siebert went one of two, and they did kickoffs in week two. So we saw again with no Godwin doing kick returns, we saw Swift as the number one, which was a bit surprising, but again, it's no biggie. And then I think Cleef Raymond was number two. And then Benson was in the mix as a kick returner. And then eventually Pimpleton. Yep. Pimpleton and Craig Reynolds ended up joining the fray after those first three got a couple of reps through the rotation. Godwin basically just stood at the goalpost and watched everyone take the reps that he should be taking, which has got to be frustrating for him. And I mean, look, he's of that group. I think he's the fastest, right? I think, maybe I'll check Raymond's 40, but I mean, Godwin can run, and that's part of the appeal. And that's part of why he ended up winning the job. Was because if he hits a seam, he can go. And I mean, we saw that as a running back, right? That 40 something yard. Yep. So it's still, it's way too early. They're going to give a lot of guys opportunities here. Didn't get to see punts yet. Well, I'm sure we'll see punts next week or something. Right. But those are your guys that are in the kick return mix, but wasn't really anything you can really ascertain from special teams right now.
No. Anything to add?
I don't.
We talked about the schedule, mini camp coming up this week.
Yeah. It's last week of school for my kids and my wife, who is a teacher / principal doing both jobs.
Hybrid,
right now, right? Yeah.
Just like the defense.
Exactly. She's doing both roles. So man, she's like extra busy. So with her being extra busy, my kids being extra busy, and then the baby, I don't know how many of those I'm going to get to. I'm working on trying to get the baby out, passed off to a grandparent.
Oh, I thought you were going to take the baby to Allen Park.
I probably could get myself a little baby Bjorn. You'd
be able to get out onto the field. They'd want to have that baby running around out there. Everybody would get a big kick out of it.
That's the thing, is she's at the age where she is just everywhere. So even if I, you know, like put her in a stroller and like rolled a stroll over,
she'd
like,
want out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I don't think they would want to have a baby in proximity of the field either.
It'd be a good distraction for
everyone. I don't think I'd get approval for that. But you know, if I can pass her off to a grandparent, that would be great. Trying to work those details out now. But yeah, great. You know, next week, the week after at OTAs, everyone's off. So great. I'm gonna get down to those. No problem. But yeah, unfortunately, it's just the timing with the end of the school year and everything. It's just chaos. That this next week, we're busy from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, all the whole family. So, yeah, but exciting, you know, we'll get two more weeks of Lion stuff, or, you know, week and a half, whatever it'll be. And then
we'll go dark.
That's it.
Yep. Yeah, and then training camp, though, we're almost there. We're under 100 days away
from
kickoff of the season. You're even closer than that for the preseason action.
Crazy. Like it's crazy to look at, like, you know, like I'm looking at it going, oh well, you know, geez, we're gonna have this huge dark period, right? And but really, end of July is not far away, and that's when it's going to be. Yeah, right, exactly. So it's the end of next month, it'll be going, and it doesn't sound very far away when you say it like that, right? So HBO will be in town, and
yeah, you got to work on getting on TV.
Yeah, I'm gonna get my treadmill out, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, the camera adds a couple of hundred pounds, according to, you know, if you remember the line from Tommy Boy.
Right. But man, it's going to be here before we know it.
Yeah. No, it's a good time to get excited. You know, like here, we have plenty of listeners across this, this huge world of ours, but yeah, locally, you know, we're hitting the best time of the year weather wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, no rain in the forecast, but like all of this just makes you feel like, yeah, football's coming again. Even though we haven't even got into summer yet, it's like, yeah, well, football's almost here.
Yeah. Well, it's as we say, it's a 24 hour a day, 365 day a year sport, right? Like right. It just does not sleep. It
does not stop. There's always something going on.
You know, and isn't the AFL close to done too?
The USFL.
USFL, gosh.
Yeah, the Panthers AFL are probably playing right now. Or it was Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
They've been terrible, as we've right discussed a couple of times.
Right. Cut their number one overall pick.
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes. Although they haven't really been terrible. They've been playing in these tight games. They're just blowing them at the end.
Oh, Jeff Fisher.
Thank Jeff Fisher for a lot of that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so but yeah, USFL will be over, and college football, we'll start hearing about them going, starting practice, and that we'll start seeing the NFL players out on the field first because their preseason starts earlier than college. But
yeah, but you know, I don't know, like it's still still recruiting in college, and now that
everybody's taking their visits right now.
All the NIL money discussions and Nick Saban fighting with coaches.
They're buddies
and stuff
again. Oh, did you hear they've reconciled? What? Everything's fine now.
Oh, I liked it better when they were fighting.
I know. We need more of that. Where the coaches hate each other. There used to be that used to be huge. Now they all know each other. Yeah. They're at all these camps together. They work together on the same staff at some point. So that's kind of all lost its luster. You know, like it's hard to hate somebody that you've been around and kind of know, unless you've learned to hate them over the time we're together. But that's more rare than we realize.
I know those guys.
Yeah.
I know them firsthand.
Sure.
So All right. Well, look.
Yeah, that's it. We're up to 412 ratings the podcast app. We have one added. That's great. Up to 89 on Spotify.
Oh,
so good. It took us a long time to get on Spotify, but we're off and running now. So, yeah. Hey, and everybody listening, we really appreciate it. We appreciate the reviews. We appreciate the listens. Hey, and if you like the show and you know some friends that aren't listening yet, we'd appreciate if you let them know to take a listen. Only if they're, you know, interested in Lions football, because this is a rather specific podcast. You
know? Right.
You might not want to give it to a friend who likes murder mystery podcasts.
You know, but if you like X's and O's.
Yeah.
X's and O's and Lions.
Right. So that's it. That's all we got for this week. Who knows when you'll hear from us again?
Hopefully soon.
Yeah. Hopefully soon. This is the slow part of the year. So we don't feel bad about missing when we do. And that's it. That's all we got. So until next time, let's go Lions.